through meditation. And I just thought that I might, before we do the meditation, because I know not everyone was there in the morning, draw out a few of the themes that felt relevant to the practice. So, yeah, Paramananda was very much talking about meditation as an opportunity to have a deeper experience of ourselves, and talked of it as an act of intimacy, that when we sit in meditation, we have that opportunity to encounter ourselves more fully. Yeah. And that we, well, we can think of meditation, I rather like this, as an expression of the heart and a way of expressing ourselves. When we're sitting meditating, we are also expressing ourselves. As well as creating a space where we can allow ourselves to be and discover ourselves more deeply. You know, turning towards ourselves and our own experience, but also turning towards the world. So, and turning towards reality, and also the two are not separate. So, we can also be turning towards ourselves as part of the world and as part of reality. That sense that everything's co-arising, constantly co-arising in the world. We are co-arising, constantly arising in the world. And as the world is arising, we are arising as part of it. Everything in relationship with everything else. So I was rather, yeah, rather affected in that in the meditation. I thought it certainly helped me open my heart and get more deep into my practice. And there was so much he did around the posture, and I'm not going to try and go into all of that, but there was one bit where he was talking about like needing to be as comfortable as possible, and he then went into the etymology of the word comfort, fort being related to strength and calm as with, so that when we're trying to sit comfortably, we're trying to sit with strength, but find a posture that's right for us and a manageable, doable way of sitting, you know. And that every time we sit, it's good to just remind ourselves of posture, take time to find a good enough posture or one that will work for us for as long as we're going to be sitting. And I also really was kind of struck with him talking about the posture being relational to gravity, that we're trying to find a posture that works with gravity. So, you know, if we are, and then there's all the talk about being aligned, so our body being in alignment, you know, shoulders aligned with hips, ears aligned with the shoulders, nose aligned with the navel. But that although in some ways, we, you know, it looks like we're sitting still, we're not, because all this movement is happening, adjustments to posture, all the movements in breathing, and our body is always quite dynamic in lots of subtle ways while we're sitting in meditation. So there's that sort of tension between stillness and movement whenever we sit. Anyway, those were just some thoughts that came up from this morning. And now let's have a period, about a 20-minute period of practice. And I'm, shall I lead it? No, I'm feeling like not leading it. We got to quite a nice, quiet, still place in meditation last night, and I think this morning. And yeah, a lot of reflections on just sitting as well. So let's just sit. 20 minutes with whatever's arising and passing away in our experience, and trying to just be there with kindness and awareness. Awake, my dear. Be kind to your sleeping heart. Take it out to the vast fields of light and let it breathe. Awake, my dear. Be kind to your sleeping heart. Take it out to the vast fields of light and let it breathe. So just ending the meditation in your own way. And allowing a little transition before we move into a more discursive space. So welcome, Paramananda.
Thank you there, Paramananda. Could you unmute and possibly put your camera on as well?
Just lose him. Okay. Hi, Paramananda. Okay. Pranjanita, do you think you could maybe try and talk to?
This meeting is being recorded.
Yes, and are we, is it now that we're supposed to ask questions if we have some?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's a point of clarification. This morning, but it's a general question. This morning, Paramananda said some, read a poem, gave a very touching talk, that really sat with me. In a very special way. And he said after that, I think this is enough. This is, I think, will give you a lot to think about. And now it sounds like a stupid question. I thought one of the goals of meditation is to clear the mind, not to think about what we just heard. Like the poems, which I always appreciate. Are we to reflect on the poems in meditation, or to clear the, what? How do these two things interact? Thank you.
Okay, so I'll answer for the moment. Hopefully, Paramananda will be with us soon in a speaking capacity. But A, I don't like to say this is what you should be doing. And also, I think there are so many paradoxes in our meditation practice. You know, we're making an effort, we're not making effort. You know, we're trying to transform ourselves, we're trying to not change anything and just be with what's there. We're on a path of growth and development, and also we've got this innate, if you want to call it Buddha nature, we've got all these qualities within that are just there, that if we uncover them and let them shine forth, so to speak. So we always have two things that might be contradictory happening together. But I think it is quite common for people to have got the idea that meditation is all about emptying the mind and not thinking. But actually, a lot of meditation, and particularly a lot of the insight meditations, do require thought and reflection. You know, and we might be especially reflecting on things like impermanence or dukkha. And when we're meditating, we're bringing all of ourselves there. Yeah. So we're not like consciously trying to analyze, decipher things, but we need to bring awareness. And there is some cognitive function in some kinds of awareness. I mean, sometimes we can be very aware in a non-cognitive way, you know, through our heart, through our energy, through our bodies, a lot of the things that Paramananda was talking about earlier. But there is, we do also have a mind that likes to think, or at least part of our mind likes to think and has tens of thousands of thoughts a day that will not just stop because we're meditating, you know. I don't know what the latest research is, but I remember 2 or 3 years ago reading a neuroscience paper where they reckoned everybody had towards somewhere between 50 and 70,000 thoughts a day. That's a lot of thoughts to be having, you know. Some of them will be happening during your meditation practice. So it's not about having thoughts or not having thoughts, it's about our relationship to the thoughts. I mean, the thing about poems is I think that they do operate on so many different levels. They're, you know, they're often speaking language of symbol and myth and archetype. And a particular word or a phrase or an image evokes something more than the actual literal word or phrase or image. which I think is why they work really well with meditation, because they can sometimes contact us. We can help us contact something or open something that we can respond to in a less I'm not going to say less rational, but less thinking way. We can just let it have an effect on us, yeah, when we hear a poem. And you know, if someone's giving you all kinds of technical teachings about meditation, it has one effect, and if someone reads a poem, particularly if it's a good poem, then even if you don't understand the poem, you don't even have to try and understand the poem, it can, your body will respond to it, your heart will respond to it, yeah? So it's not like the fact that Paramananda read the poem meant that you then were expected to spend the meditation analysing it, but it might be that something, a phrase of it, an image of it, a word of it, touched your heart or caught your imagination, and it might come up in your meditation, and that's fine, yeah? And I think, yes, all the thought, you know, he did quite a lot of exploration using the poem in a way to look into some really key aspects of our experience and particular way of approaching or thinking about meditation. And again, you can think about that, you can analyse that, but that's not necessarily what you'll be doing in the meditation, but it might inform your practice, just having heard him give the talk. Certainly that was my experience. I don't know if that makes any sense, Khadija? Or is it just as confusing?
Yes, very much. Thank you very much.
But does it answer your question?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, good. Hi, Paramananda. Okay. Anyone else got anything they wanted to bring up or explore or ask?
Hi, Bodhilina. Hi, everyone. It's
Catherine.
Hi. Yeah, no, it's been wonderful sessions. Thank you so much. Yeah. I'd just like to emphasize something that's really come up for me is around posture. And I've had sort of like a different emphasis, a different light's been shined on today, the way that Paramananda has communicated this. So I've always, you know, been meditating about 10 years and so aware how important posture is. But it's actually like if the emphasis is on the posture and actually supporting the infrastructure around the body, as in getting your skeletal and, you know, and your skull and everything in position, and then just relaxing and allow the rest kind of to be fluid. I always thought, well, of course it is, the posture is the whole thing, but anyway, it just made so much sense. It was like a light, if I could actually see all the bones and everything kind of lined up and just let the rest flow. And I've never sort of visualized it like that before, but anyway, but I found it very helpful. Thank you.
It was very helpful, and I can see Paramananda now, though you are still muted, Paramananda. You might want to answer that. But yes, I really like the idea of, you know, yes, the structure aligning, the structure, but our posture aligning ourselves with gravity. Yeah, because in a way, if we can just get the posture in good enough and we're aligned, then yeah, we're held down by gravity, the forces of gravity. We don't have to hold ourselves up in the same way. And the idea that if there is misalignment, that's when we have to, you know, use more energy and tension to try and put ourselves, and that creates problems. So that was really helpful. There was a lot, actually, in what Paramananda was saying, especially all the stuff about relaxing. and what would happen if you completely let go in the body, in particular parts of the body like the legs, and that we might find that quite scary. Yeah, the idea of completely letting go. And also the, relaxing and the flow. Ah, Paramananda.
Hello, sorry about that.
Great to have you with us.
Technical issues here.
Yes. So did you hear what Catherine said?
Sorry, I only said about, I was talking to on the phone, so I caught half of it, really.
Well, she was, well, you can say it again if you want. Yeah.
Oh, hi, Paramananda. Oh, great. Great to have you back. Oh, I was just sort of appreciating your depth of practice and the session so far, but I was a specific emphasis on posture, and it was sort of like a new insight that I haven't kind of really considered before. And it was about this sense of alignment, but I was kind of like had a glimpse of the body as if like a torch had been shined on it, you know, and sort of like getting all the bones and everything in alignment and aligning yourself up, and then just like deeply relaxing. So I've always kind of tried to bring my whole body present, but actually it was like the significance, the importance of actually getting some kind of alignment and then just kind of be fluid to the rest without sort of over trying and this and that. And if you get the alignment and everything right, everything else is just okay. Everything will just kind of take care of itself, maybe. Thank you.
I think that's right. If the alignment's right, really, the rest. I suppose the thing with the body is, I think the body kind of wants to come into alignment, if you know what I mean. So it's a sort of feedback thing. The more you relax, the more the body will find its own way, in a sense. Does that make sense? Yeah, if you can sort of have an internal, well, you say in your sense it was a visual thing, wasn't it? I mean, whether it's visual or felt, it doesn't really matter. If you have a kind of sense of alignment, and then the body will, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Anyway, it sounds good, doesn't it, what you said?
Thank you.
Sounds very good, yeah. I think basically, I mean, you can think of the body both, in a way the body is both a physical thing, but it's also a kind of image or, us coming into alignment, there's a sort of physiological aspect to it, but probably even more importantly, there's kind of an imaginal aspect, really, and the two work together, you know? So if you have this sense of allowing the body to align properly, I think what you said, everything, the rest kind of does follow, yeah. But I'm not being very articulate about this, am I?
Thank you.
Anyone else have anything they wanted to explore or share? Okay, well, I'll say something, because one thing that did really strike me, because I'm very aware of that sense of the body holding all of our experience and history and feelings, emotions, thoughts and memories that we can access sometimes when we are meditating. But I've never really thought in terms of like the body holding craving and aversion and all those things. And that opened up something for me as well. So is that something that you consciously practice with Paramananda, that awareness, or is it just what emerged while you were leading that in meditation?
Consciously. Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I think we've always been prepared. I mean, craving is a feeling, isn't it?
Yes.
So, you know, like everything else, it's going to manifest through the body in some way or other. Yeah?
Hmm.
But it's also part of, what can we say, our embodied experience. I think it very much, in the posture, I think aversion and craving very strongly manifest, really, yeah. It's quite a physical thing, isn't it? All those aversion, craving, they're all very physical, really, aren't they? I mean, they obviously have a mental component as well, but, you know, on the most basic level, they're kind of physiological responses, aren't they? You know, like hunger and fear and things. You know? That's not quite what you meant, though, is it?
Well, it's part of it, but... Yeah, I suppose I was just thinking of, you know, like when we're working with the body and sensations, and, you know, I'm used to like seeing, well, what does this feeling feel like in the body? And maybe if there's fear or grief or anger present, very much working with that on a physical level. But I haven't necessarily thought, oh, there's craving present or there's aversion present, I'll work with that. So yeah, it's a reframing probably of a lot of the same things, but it also seemed to have a deeper, wider context or something to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I have recently found myself talking about meditation basically in those terms of craving and aversion, really, you know, and at the posture, we're trying to find a posture that's not sort of based in that, you know, the alignment really is when the posture's balanced. But yeah, that's, I suppose I do feel that balance that also includes, you know, non-craving or non-aversion, you know. So when we have craving or aversion, it's obviously going to manifest in the body in some way or the other, you know. And it's a bit difficult to explain, isn't it? But I think our whole meditation can be understood of trying to work with craving and aversion, can't it? You know, that's the sort of basics of meditation, really. Although we don't normally talk about it in that sense, you know. But we're trying to develop awareness and love, if you like. Well, you know, why are we trying to do that? We're trying to do that really to, first notice craving and second, go beyond craving or aversion, aren't we? That makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily how I've sort of been thinking about it, but it makes total sense. And I will definitely be exploring that further.
Yes, I don't know. Yeah, maybe we don't often talk about meditation that way. I don't know. I found myself talking about it in that way recently, more and more, actually. You know, noticing how that arises and allowing it. I mean, I suppose what we're trying to do symbolically with the posture, I mean, not just symbolic, but we try, when the body is properly relaxed in the line, energetically it will allow things to arise and release, won't they? And when they kind of get stuck, things getting stuck is related to craving or aversion, isn't it? The like related to holding on or trying to push away. So we're trying to resist the initial experience of the aversion. We're trying to kind of deny the experience of that. And craving, because we like the experience, we're trying to hold on to the experience. So the alignment really is a way of trying to form a vessel, if you like. We think of our body as a vessel, trying to form a vessel that allows things to freely move through it. If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, makes sense to me. Yeah.
But, you know, it's more of a felt experience, isn't it? You know, when you know, sometimes when you sit down, it's just right, isn't it? Everything's kind of right, you know. Through, you know, the posture's just right. Mental, the attitude kind of follows the posture, if you like. But, they're two sides of the same coin, aren't they? I was calling, I think when I was speaking, I probably said we're making a gesture, you know, the body, we're making a kind of gesture through the body. But we're trying to establish a particular attitude, if you like, but attitude which includes a physical attitude, you know, and a sort of mental attitude of comes with the posture, and you just take the posture, and the posture is relaxed and aligned. As we were saying before, in a way, that's all you need to do, really. The rest will take care of itself, because the sort of mind is reflective of the body or the posture, yeah? It's a gesture of mind as well as a physical gesture that we're making. You know, it's a token of a certain attitude. I mean, we get it, don't we? I did refer to the image of the Buddha. You get it in the image of the Buddha, don't you? Our pictorial rupa can suggest a state of mind. We're kind of suggesting a state of mind to ourselves through the posture.
Hey, Minnie, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, there was something that I've really been trying to explore a bit myself that you talked about this morning, Paramananda, and you talked about it incredibly beautifully. And that was to do with meditation just being an expression.
Mm.
And I paint, and I often find that my painting and my meditation feel to me like the same thing, but I find it really hard to describe at all what I mean by that. And I just have this sense of, with my practice, my meditation practice, that I just do it because I do it that I do it because I kind of love it and it feels right, but I'm not really aiming for anything with it. And I've been on lots of meditation retreats where I'm learning lots, and it's really useful, and there's techniques, and there's whole kind of schools of thought and principles and everything. And it feels like sometimes it all just lacks something from me, which is, it's just really simple. It just comes down to something really simple, which for me, you just captured that this morning, just something about that, the beauty of just doing it because it's,
yes,
just so close to us in some way that we're more purely ourselves when we're meditating. But it sounds a bit daft, doesn't it?
It does sound a bit daft, and it's hard to put in a satisfying conceptual way, because it's not really a conceptual thing, I think, you know? I mean, what our conceptual mind wants to do is sort of make something of everything, isn't it?
Yes.
So, you know, when we really do something that we enjoy, we're not used. I mean, okay, maybe some people love doing mathematics or whatever, but you know, that bit of us is usually quietened down, isn't it? That conceptual or that grasping part of it. I mean, I'm glad you're saying what you said. That's what, when I was referring, wasn't I, this morning about in how in Zen Buddhism, they say there's no gap between the aspiration and the fulfillment, and that's what they mean, really. I mean, that doesn't really seem to make any sense, but I think it relates to what we're talking about here, you know? So it's not that we're grasping for anything or wanting anything, it's just that we're enjoying the experience, as it were, or having the experience. You know?
It just felt like a huge relief to me to be back on retreat with you and hear you speaking in that way, and it just resonates really deeply. So thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thanks for saying that. Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, I think this is it, really. When we try and pin it down, or I'm trying to sort of put it more conceptually, it's quite difficult, isn't it? And I suppose it is, like, you know, I think there's something very similar between something like meditating and painting, actually. You know, you're just, it's doing itself in a sense, isn't it? You're getting out of the way and it's doing itself. Quite hard to,
Something about striving to be good at it, you know. It's like this sort of element of that we have from our education or whatever it is, our roots, that we've got to be kind of learning something and getting better at it and making progress. And you know, I know there is a deepening experience, but it seems a bit different to what you're describing, you know. And yeah, I think our human inclination is that we want to be doing it better. We don't think we're doing it properly, or you know, it's a little technique that we could learn that would make it all be all right.
Certainly that's our culture, isn't it? And that's the way we approach things. But I think in a way it's a real shame if we approach meditation in that way, because meditation can be one of the few things in our lives where that isn't the case. You know, it is. I think you said, you know, you just do it because you want to do it. That's it, but you do it for its own sake. Of course, you know, we know it might be helpful to us, but we know it might, whatever, but actually when we're actually meditating, I do feel, you know, we should give up any idea of achieving anything if possible, just because that's already a split, isn't it? Once we want something other than what we're experiencing, we're creating craving, aren't we? You know, we might say it's a positive craving, if that's such a thing. You know what I mean? We create a gap between the actual experience and what we think the experience should be. So that's exactly what we're trying to heal, really, through meditating. As far as we're trying to do anything, we're trying to close that gap, really. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So if we can just be fully present, that actually is all we need to do, really, is to be present. And that's all we're trying to do. The rest sort of will take care of itself, I think.
Okay, so it is time to end there. Thank you very much, to Kamini and Khadija and Catherine, for your questions. I mean, I think we've had some really interesting exploration, and then this evening we have a session which is going to be more meditation and ritual, 7:30, and if you can't make that, tomorrow morning 9 till 11, I'll be trying my best to follow on from Paramananda's talk, And we'll also have a morning of practice. And yeah, that is going to be the pattern for the rest of the retreat, that we have a morning session 9 till 11, groups 3:30 to 4-ish, 4 till 5. We'll have meditation and Q&A, or meditation and more practice. And then the evenings will be much more sort of meditative and devotional. Maybe not always a puja, but we might just do some mantra chanting. See what emerges as we go along. So thank you all very much for coming, and hope to see you tonight.
Thank you.